Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we left off on the concept of Umrah, and this would be the next thing that needs to occur after sighting the Kaaba. So as far as Umrah is concerned, what I'd like to really hammer home, because this is something that you'll use for the rest of your life. Umrah is essentially two acts. The first is that there's tawaf, and the second is that there's sa'i. So Umrah is comprised of two acts, tawaf and sa'i. Tawaf means to circle the Kaaba seven times. And sa'i means to move between Safa and Marwa, these two small hills, seven times. Both tawaf and sa'i must be done in a state of ihram. Both tawaf and sa'i must be done in a state of ihram. So, we're going to talk about Umrah by starting a discussion of tawaf. Tawaf in the Arabic language, tafa yatufu in the Arabic language means to circle. And tawaf means to circle around the Kaaba. Legally, it means to circle around the Kaaba seven times. Literally, it means to circle. Spiritually, it's the act in which the beloved, the lover is circling the home of the beloved. So what's happening in tawaf, spiritually, is that a person is circling the house of Allah, trying to attain him, trying to attain a proximity to him. There's several types of tawaf. All of them are performed the same way. For example, there's a tawaf of Umrah, there's a tawaf of Hajj, there's a tawaf that could be done, supererogatory tawaf, that's just done any day that you feel like making tawaf around the Kaaba. They're all done in the same way. The first step in any tawaf is to make wudu. Very important. You must be in a state of wudu to perform tawaf. So, if you don't have wudu, you should make wudu before you begin tawaf. Step two, you have to locate the starting point. Step two, locate the starting point. So the way that you locate the starting point is that you have to locate the black stone, and that is the place in which you're going to start. So the way we're going to do this, let's use this imaginary model. This is a model that was built, I think, first or second after Hijri. No, first or second annual tawaf Hajj ceremony. So this is a model of the Kaaba, and you can see this is to indicate the black stone. So tawaf actually should be in this.
Can
we? We can move, pick it up. Ajib, because it's like, they had asked me this and I messed this up. Sorry about the people sitting there. Yeah, that's perfect. Okay. So the way this is going to work is that the first step is to locate the black stone. So there, for example, I located the black stone. There's a few ways to locate the black stone. One way to locate the black stone is that across from the black stone, there's a ceiling, there's a wall. Like, imagine seeing the masjid, that yellow pillar on the top of the pillar and this column, right up at the column line, that yellow, that there's like a light, a fluorescent green light in the haram, indicating that that's where the black stone is opposite. So there's the black stone, and then there's a wall opposite with a green light on it. So that's one way to locate the black stone. The other way to locate the black stone is that if you look around the masjid in the sky, all the minarets of the masjid are in pairs. So there's two, and then two, and then two, and then two. And the one that's opposite the black stone is one. So all the minarets will be paired except the one that's opposite the black stone. So all of this will help you to locate the black stone. So that's the first step to locate the black stone. Once you locate the black stone, in your mind, you create an imaginary line from the black stone all the way to that yellow marking on the wall, or the speaker, imagine the speaker there. So you'll make an imaginary line, and that's your start point. Okay, so that's going to be the start point, so that's important. Okay, here's a picture of the masjid, and the purpose of this picture is to highlight that there's multiple minarets, and that the only one single minaret is opposite the black stone. Okay, here's a little schematic of the Kaaba. And you can see that this is the black stone, which is indicated by this circle. And you'll see that opposite the black stone, there's a wall with these green lights. Okay. And then there's just the imaginary line. Okay? So this is the start line that I want you to draw in your mind. So this is the first step. Okay? So we've made the blacks, we've made the imaginary line. Okay. So that was step two. Locate the starting point. Okay, step three. Step three is to decide whether you need to expose your right shoulder. Okay, let me take a step back. For brothers, you're going to be in a state of ihram. Right? You may be in a state of ihram. One of the things that happens when you are making tawaf is that you sometimes have to expose your right shoulder. So give me the ihram. Where is it? Okay. So normally... Okay. Normally when you wear the ihram, you wear it like this, right? At the time of tawaf, you have to decide, am I going to expose my right shoulder or not? So exposing of the right shoulder means that you take the ihram and you put it like this and you keep your right shoulder exposed. Okay, so in order to decide whether or not you're going to expose your right shoulder, you're going to ask yourself two questions. First question, am I wearing ihram or am I wearing regular clothes? If you're wearing regular clothes, you're not going to pull your arm out of your shirt and expose it. I know it sounds funny, but I want to make it clear. So anytime you're doing tawaf with regular clothes, you will never expose your right shoulder. Is that clear? Okay, now when would you be doing tawaf in regular clothes? I don't know, you finish the hajj, and you decide to get up one day when you're in the masjid and make tawaf. So you just make tawaf, and you don't have to expose your right shoulder. So that's the first question. Second question. After my tawaf, am I going to do walking back and forth between Safa and Marwa? If I am going to walk back and forth between Safa and Marwa, then as males, I have to do two things. The males have to do two things. Number one, expose their right shoulder if they're wearing ihram. And number two, in the first few rounds of the tawaf, okay, it's during the first three rounds, there's a light jogging motion that has to be made as the person's making tawaf. Is that clear? Okay, so these are two things that will happen in the following circumstance. If I am making tawaf and I know that after tawaf I have to do sa'i, then I'm going to keep two considerations in mind. Consideration number one, if I'm wearing ihram, I'll expose my right shoulder. Consideration number two, during the first three rounds, I'm going to walk like this, you know, like a boxer would before a match. I'm going to walk like this. So these two things are important to be aware of. They're not mandatory. If you miss them, it's not going to be a major problem, but you do need to be aware of them. Okay, now, so why did I mention this? Because you got to prepare your right shoulder if it's going to be exposed. Step number four, you have to make an intention. So just before you get to the start point, just before the start line, you're going to face the Kaaba. So ideally what you want to do is you want to be away from the Kaaba, okay? And you're thinking about everything. You expose your right shoulder, and now you make an intention. So you face the Kaaba, and you make an intention. You're way in the back at this point. You know, you haven't started anything. So you make the intention. What's the intention? Oh Allah, I intend to perform seven circuits of tawaf. Make it easy for me and accept it from me. Oh Allah, I intend to perform seven circuits of tawaf. Make it easy for me and accept it from me. Okay? Now, the next step. The next step is to make takbir. Now listen.
Allahumma lakbir.
Huh?
Allahumma lakbir.
No. Takbir.
Takbir.
The next step is to make takbir. So, you know when you begin salah, when you're praying, you make takbir and you bind your hands? when you begin tawaf, you also make takbir. So you get to the starting line. So now I'm looking, I'm walking, right? The tawaf is going this way. So there's a green light there. I made an imaginary line in my mind. So I get to the imaginary line. Let's say I'm at the imaginary line. I'm facing the direction of flow. I turn my body towards the black stone, towards the Kaaba, and I make takbir. Bismillahi Allahu Akbar walillahi alhamd. Look. Bismillahi Allahu Akbar walillahi alhamd. So that's the step to make takbir. Is that clear? Okay. Sorry? Okay. Is that clear? Okay. Now, after making the takbir, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam went to the black stone, put both of his hands on the black stone, and kissed the black stone. Okay? However, I guarantee that's not happening. And especially if you want to come back with your clothes on, your haram on, it's not happening. Okay? So, the next best thing would be that you would take a stick and you would go to the black stone and you would touch the stick and say, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar. Okay? That's also not happening because you don't have any stick. And it's also going to be difficult. You bring a stick, they'll arrest you. Then you got bigger problems. Okay? So what's the third option? The third option is from a distance to greet the black stone. That's called istilam. Don't worry about the name. If you know the name, that's great. From a distance to greet the black stone. So you'll put your hands in the direction of the black stone as if you're bringing the black stone to you. You'll put your hands in the direction of the black stone, say, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar, and kiss your hands. Okay, so now let's tie all of that together. Okay, I'm way back. I just entered into the gathering. I say, okay, I make my intention. Oh Allah, I intend to perform 7 circuits of tawaf. Make it easy for me. Accept it from me. Expose my right shoulder. Make my plan. Start heading to the start point. I'm walking to the start point. Identify the line. Takbir. Bismillahi Allahu Akbar walillahi alhamd. Drop my hands. Then put my hands towards the stone. Bismillahi Allahu Akbar. Kiss my hands and move. Got it? Okay. So there's kind of 2 actions in one. Now what happens is it's fast and there's crowds and you're being pushed. So you're going to rapidly do all this together. I'm breaking it up so you can see slow motion. But here's what's really happening. Bismillahi Allahu Akbar walillahi alhamd. Okay? So you're doing everything combined. And you're just quickly getting started because of the force of the people coming from behind you. So I just want you to think in your mind, I'm doing one takbir and one istilam. One takbir to start and one greeting of the stone. Okay, so that's step 4. Okay, sorry, that's step 5. Okay, step 6, now you begin the tawaf. So now you start circling. You'll circle in the direction of flow. When you make tawaf, you can make any dhikr you want. Nothing has been established for the vast majority of tawaf. The only thing that you cannot do is you cannot recite talbiyah. Talbiyah finishes with the takbir of tawaf. So no more labbaik, Allahumma labbaik. You're there. You don't need to recite labbaik. You already made it there. Okay? Now what you need to do is you need to make dhikr, recite Quran, recite shahada, recite whatever comes to your heart. Sometimes you see people have books and they recite all these things, but nothing has been established from the sunnah. These are only the recommendations of the scholars, which have their value. I'm not denigrating that. But we should just be cognizant of the fact that there is nothing that has been particularly prescribed. So what should we do? We should have a plan. One plan could be to read from a book, but I already gave you my opinion about reading from a book. I mean, it's like, oh Allah, please guide me to the straight path and make me among... I mean, there's no heart in that. It's like you're caught up in reading, so how can you focus on the dua, right? I mean, I think that we should have a plan in our mind. And you could even make it in English, by the way. You can make whatever dua you want in English. So ideally, maybe think, I'm going to recite Shahada. I'm going to recite something. I'm going to recite this. I'm going to recite this ayah. I'm going to recite this dhikr. I'm going to recite istighfar. I'm going to recite whatever. Whatever comes to your mind. There is nothing prescribed, nor should we prescribe anything. The other thing is, if you start saying, whoever recites this in the first tawaf gets this, that's now taking this too far. Okay? So we have to establish it only as it was established by the Sunnah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Okay, now here are some suggestions, okay, of things that I heard from my teachers. So one thing that my teacher would say, Ibrahim alayhi salam was commanded to proclaim the pilgrimage among men so that people can witness the benefits provided for them. It's an ayah in the Quran, and I reference the ayah here. So, proclaim the pilgrimage among men so that they may witness the benefits provided for them. So, maybe you could recite this ayah, particularly the back half of this ayah, so that they can witness the benefits provided for them and make dua. Oh Allah, allow me to witness the benefits of Hajj. Allow me to witness the benefits of the Kaaba. Allow me to witness the benefits of being in the Haram. Allow me to witness the benefits that my predecessors witnessed when they made Hajj. So we can leverage this ayah in the context of the tawaf. Okay, another example. In another place in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala describes the Kaaba as Mubarakan wa hudan lil alameen, a place of blessing and a guidance for the world. So we could say, we could recite that ayah and think in our heart or make dua, oh Allah, you made this a place of blessing. Bless my family, bless my home, bless my job, bless my wealth, bless my health, bless my deen, bless my memory, bless my this, bless my that, etc. Or, Ya Allah, you made this a place, hudan lil alameen. You made this a place of guidance for all of mankind. Allow me to be guided. Allow my parents to be guided. Allow my children to be guided. Allow me to be guided in the dark. Allow me to be guided in the light. Allow me to be guided in my old age. Allow me to be guided in my youth. Allow me to be guided through the Quran. Allow me to be guided through the scholars. Allow me to be guided to come to the masjid regularly, etc., etc. So these are the types of du'as that you want to make. Okay, another place in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala describing the haram says, وَمَنْ دَخَلَهُ كَانَ آمِنًا. Whoever enters it is attains security. So Ya Allah, I have entered your haram. So make my body secure from the punishment in the grave. Make my body secure from the punishment of Jahannam. Make my wealth secure. Make my family secure. Make my spouse secure. Make my children secure. Make my job secure. Make our akhirah secure. So these types of du'as can be made. In another place in the Quran, Allah states, وَأَتِمُّ الْحَجَّ وَالْعُمْرَةَ لِلَّهِ. Complete Hajj and Umrah for Allah. So Ya Allah, allow me to be wise enough to be able to complete this Hajj only for you. Remove all competing intentions. Remove any other desire in my heart. I want that I'm here only for you, and that I only gain your love, and that I only gain your proximity. So this would be another dua that could be made at the time. Okay, so that's some examples. Now, if you read the little booklet that I gave, I provide dozens of examples of different ideas and concepts that can be in one's mind. You can recite Shahada. You can recite Salawat on Rasulullah. You can recite Istighfar. You can recite different dua and dhikr that you've learned in Hadith. You can recite Ayat of the Quran. Anything. It's open to you. Now, as we're making Tawaf, we're going to pass three corners of the Kaaba and we'll come to the third corner, which is called the Yemeni corner. Okay? So when we get to the third corner, from the third corner to the black stone, which is the final quarter of the Kaaba, it is sunnah to recite something there. It's sunnah to recite, رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَا وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَا وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. Sunnah to recite from the third corner of the Kaaba to the fourth corner of the Kaaba, رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَا وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَا وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. Now, when we get to the third corner, it's actually ideal to touch the corner with the right hand, okay? Or both palms. But usually it's too far, and we can't do that. So if we can't do that, we won't do anything. Now you'll see a lot of people will be doing stuff there. You'll see people saying, Allahu Akbar. Okay? Or people will be, you know, making a lot of noise as they pass that corner. That's not from the sunnah. The sunnah is to either touch the corner or do nothing. So for that reason, we will either touch the corner or do nothing. So right when we pass, the only acknowledgement of that corner will be that we will recite, رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ, from that corner all the way till the fourth corner, till the black stone, right? The final black, you'll come back to the black stone. That completes one circuit. So let's review. We will locate the black stone, locate the green light on the wall, draw this imaginary line we see on the screen. At that point, we now will make our intention, expose our shoulder if necessary, come to the starting line, make takbir, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar walillahi alhamd, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar, kiss our hands, and start walking forward. As we walk forward, we're going to pass some things, like the door of the Kaaba. We're going to pass this golden sort of decoration piece with that's surrounded by glass that contains the footsteps of Ibrahim alayhi salam. It's called Maqam Ibrahim. We're going to pass that. We're going to pass one corner of the Kaaba. We're going to pass this C-shaped wall in which people will be praying. And we will not go inside, but we'll pass the outside of that. We'll pass another corner. We'll come to the Yemeni corner. That's the third corner. If we can touch, we would touch it. But since we can't, we'll just recite. We just continue on, and we recite, رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. We keep reciting that until we come to the black stone. Once we come to the black stone, we then now make another istilam. So listen, I'm walking from the Kaaba. I've completed my, almost done with my first round. That's the Yemeni corner. So I'm just walking slowly. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. Now I came to my imaginary line, correct? When I come to my imaginary line, بِسْمِ اللَّهِ اللَّهُ أَكْبَرُ وَلِلَّهِ الْحَمْدُ. Kiss my hand. Okay? And then continue on. So every time you pass the black stone, you will greet the black stone and kiss your hands and recite Bismillahi Allahu Akbar or Bismillahi Allahu Akbar wa lillahi alhamd. Is that clear? Okay. So what's going to happen? Round one. Okay, so we started with a greeting of the black stone, correct? We complete round one, we greet the stone. We complete round two, we greet the stone. Complete round three, four, five, six, seven, greet the stone. So how many times did we greet the stone? Eight, right? Seven with each round, and one at the very beginning. So we've done eight greetings of the black stone. When we greet the black stone the final eighth time, the end of the seventh round, we're done, and we'll escape the gathering. Does that make sense? Okay, so let's keep looking at this now. Okay? With each circuit, look at the screen. With each circuit, we greet the black stone by reciting Bismillahi Allahu Akbar. We'll complete the seventh round. We'll make a Bismillahi Allahu Akbar and greet the stone at the end of seventh round. And after tawaf, we cover our shoulder. So, after completing tawaf, if our shoulder was exposed, we then cover our shoulder back up. And now we're, you know, back to this normal state. So we're back like this, and our shoulders covered. Is that clear? Okay. Now, listen very carefully, because this will help you throughout your life. Every single tawaf, listen, every single tawaf is always capped off with two rak'ah of salah. So, actually, the way you want to think about it is tawaf plus salah. There is never a circumstance in your life where you will perform tawaf and will not perform two rakah of salah after tawaf. So every single tawaf must be capped with two rakah of salah. This two rakah is wajib. Ideally, in the perfect world, do you see, look at the picture there on the screen. Do you see the door of the Kaaba? And then do you see there's a little thing on the ground in front of the door of the Kaaba? That's called Maqam Ibrahim. It's a glass domed structure which actually contains the footsteps. Can you point to Maqam Ibrahim? Yes, so that's Maqam Ibrahim there. So ideally, what you'd like to do is you'd like to pray two rakah of salah at Maqam Ibrahim. But the reality is that that will be totally full of people. So you cannot do that, nor should you do that, nor should you ever disturb people. So I don't think there will be any time in your life where you'll be able to perform two rakah at Maqam Ibrahim. Is that clear? So what you'll do instead is you'll find some place way in the back, in the relative vicinity of Maqam Ibrahim, and you'll see people will be doing this, and you'll go there and you'll pray. Is that clear? So you will pray two rakah. In the first rakah, you recite Kul Ya Ayyuhal Kafirun. And in the second rakah, you recite Kul Huwallahu Ahad. First rakah, Kul Ya Ayyuhal Kafirun. In the second rakah, Kul Huwallahu Ahad. Is that clear? Okay. So you complete the seven circuits, and then you get out of the gathering, and you perform the two rakahs. Okay. One more thing. So I'm making tawaf, right? I make, this is my black stone over here. That's the green thing on the wall. I'm walking. I complete round one, round two, round three. When I get to my sixth round, and I'm starting to complete the sixth round, I'm sort of heading towards the end of the seventh, it's wise to begin to move towards the edge of the gathering as you're circling, right? Because when you want to get out, you're not going to be able to bust through the crowd and push everybody out of the way. So way in advance, you should have thought that I need to get to the outer periphery of the gathering so that when I complete that seventh round, make my istilam, or make my greeting of the black stone, I can get out and go find a place to pray. Is that clear? Okay. So that's Salah at Maqam Ibrahim. Okay, this is a picture of Maqam Ibrahim. One second. This is a picture of Maqam Ibrahim. And I've already explained the circumstances concerning it. Yes?
For how many rounds do you do Ramal?
Ramal, three rounds. Yeah. Okay?
After the seventh round, only we do is two rakat.
So after you complete the seventh round, you're going to cap that off with two rakah of salah.
Two rakah, not every round.
No, not every round. At the end of tawaf.
At the end of tawaf.
And again, I'll repeat, this is a big principle. Every single tawaf that you ever do in your life will always be followed by two rakah of salah. If one day you're sitting in front of the Kaaba and you decide to do seven circuits of tawaf, it has to be clapped off with two rakah of salah. If you're doing hajj and you come back to the Kaaba to do the tawaf of hajj, it has to be capped off with two rakah of salah. There is no circumstance when you will perform tawaf without adding the salah at the end. So actually, like I said, I always say it's tawaf plus salah, because you cannot ever be doing tawaf without salah. Okay? All right, next step. Once the tawaf is complete, the next step is to partake of zamzam. Partake of zamzam. Now, zamzam is a well which has a very special water that obviously has its blessings associated with it. The way that we partake of Zamzam is two options. Option one, there are some like taps on the wall, you know, like faucets on the wall. And you can go along that area of the back wall and you can partake of Zamzam by getting it from the faucets. You can also get it from these coolers. There's these coolers everywhere in the building which actually contain Zamzam as well. The goal of partaking of Zamzam is, number one, is to get the barakah and the blessings of Zamzam. The way that we do that is, number one, to drink as much as possible. Number two, to face the direction of the Kaaba when we drink. Number three, to drink with the right hand. Number four, to stand while we drink. Now, normally it's sunnah to drink, but in this instance it's sunnah to stand. So we'll stand while we drink. You can take a little bit of water and wipe it over your body Now, I'm not saying you should douse yourself because you'll make the floor wet and people will slip. Just a little bit and, you know, put it on your body. And at the same time, you should make dua. So let me just say a few things. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, there's a hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam which says that, in which the following statement was made. Ma'u zamzam lima shuribala. Ma'u zamzam lima shuribala. The water of Zamzam is for whatever it is taken for. So what does that mean? Whatever intention we make at the time of Zamzam, we get that benefit. That's what the hadith is saying. So we should make different intentions. For example, here's some examples of intention. Oh Allah, on the day of judgment, water, it'll be very difficult to find water to quench thirst. So let my partaking of this water quench my thirst on the day of judgment. Ya Allah, let my quenching of this water protect me from having no water in Jahannam. Ya Allah, let this water extinguish the fire of my sins underneath my feet. Ya Allah, let this water provide me with health. Ya Allah, because of this water, Mecca became established. Because you know the history. The water came, then the people, then the animals came, then the people came. So Ya Allah, because of this water, Mecca became established. And a messenger was sent. So because of my drinking this water, allow my heart to be established. And allow pious people to be sent towards me. Right? So there's so many different dua that can be made in the context of Zamzam. And we should make them. We should make abundant dua. Oh Allah, let this be a cure for my spiritual diseases and my physical diseases. One dua that was made by Ibn Abbas, radiallahu an. Ibn Abbas used to make the following dua. So sometimes you'll hear this dua. Allahumma inni as'aluka ilman nafi'a. Oh Allah, I ask you for beneficial knowledge. Wa rizqan wasi'a. And a abundant risk, a wide and expansive risk. وَشِفَاءً مِنْ كُلِّ دَاءٍ and cure from every disease. So this dua was recited by Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhu. So we should also try to partake of this dua. اللهم إني أسألك علما نافعا. O Allah, I ask you for beneficial knowledge. وَرِزْقًا وَاسِعًا and an expansive risk, okay, sustenance. وَشِفَاءً مِنْ كُلِّ دَاءٍ and cure from every disease. Is that clear? Okay. Again, I've already told you, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that Zamzam is for whatever it is intended. So whatever intention we make, inshallah Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will grant us that spiritual benefit and reward. Okay. Now a few things concerning tawaf. Number one, all seven rounds should be done consecutively in a state of wudu. We must be in a state of wudu and we should do all seven rounds consecutively. If wudu breaks before the fourth round is complete, then we need to go make wudu and start over again. If wudu breaks after the fourth round, then we can resume at the last complete round. So let's take scenario one. Scenario one, I'm making tawaf and my wudu breaks in the second round. I go leave, make wudu, come back, start over. Scenario two, making tawaf, I complete round five, my wudu breaks. I go back, make wudu, come back, complete round six and seven. Is that clear? Okay. All right, it's also okay to perform tawaf on the second and third floors. People will be making tawaf on the third floor, on the second floor, that's okay. When you're making tawaf, if you're confused, am I in the sixth round or the fifth round? You go with the lowest number, and just continue. So here's one thing we don't want to do. We don't want to sit and debate. Is this round five or round four? Oh, let me see. I remember those Turkish people. They started with me. I think I saw them do six rounds, so I must be on five. And, you know, half the round goes into debating. Shaitan always tries to confuse the believer. Shaitan always tries to confuse the believer. He brings these things. Am I on the fourth rakah or am I on the third rakah? Oh shoot, did I make wudu before I started praying? Oh, am I on the sixth round or am I on the fifth round? The Sharia has a very clear principle concerning all of the whisperings of shaitan, which is that you always assume what's certain, move on, don't play ping pong. Fourth round, fifth round, fifth round, fourth round, fourth round, fifth round. That's ping pong. We don't play ping pong with Shaitan. We just ignore and move on. So I'm praying and I start thinking, oh, did I make wudu? I say, what are you talking about? I've been making my wudu since I was seven. It's all from Shaitan. Boom, move forward. Okay? So in my mind, I don't give Shaitan any space to play ping pong. Am I on my third rakah or second rakah? Second rakah. Done. Move forward. So Sharia doesn't leave space to play games with Shaitan. Am I on the fifth round or fourth round? Fourth. Move. That's it. Don't give any room for Shaitan. So if you're confused about the number, then you go with a certain number. Okay. If you drop something, better to not bend down to pick it up because there's a large number of people coming from behind you. You don't want to get knocked over. Your body should face in the direction of flow. If the congregational prayer begins, you know, you're making tawaf and it's time for fajr, you'll just pray fajr right there, stand up and continue the tawaf. Okay? Husband and wife should not hold hands or touch physically. So there's different rulings on this. So why did I put this here? Because remember the romance clause, right? So we got to be careful about the romance issue. If a husband and wife can hold hands because they feel they need to, so they don't get lost and they can keep themselves safe, if they feel safer, it's okay so long as there's no emotion arising in between them because of it. But if emotion begins to arise in between them because of it, then they should not do so. It's better to perform tawaf on your own strength, but if you need to, wheelchairs are available. And please, please, please turn off your cell phone. In fact, I'll give you a better piece of advice. Please, please, please get rid of your cell phone. You don't need the cell phone over there. I mean, we're going there to... It's like, let me just tell you something. I mean, you have cancer. Let's say I have cancer. I'm hooked up to the chemotherapy machine, and I'm taking a picture and putting it on Snapchat. Check me out. How many times have you seen that picture? Nobody does that. Nobody's sitting in the middle of chemotherapy and taking pictures and sending it out that, you know, hey, look at me. I mean, we're doing tawaf, and like we're taking pictures, check me out. You know, that's not the attitude that should be there. We're not trying to show the world what we're doing. We're trying to show Allah that we've done very little and we're begging for His forgiveness. So we are there as patients. We are there as chemotherapy. We are there to save our souls. So why would we be taking pictures and sending it to the world? Forget it. And anyway, I came so far, spent so much, waited so long to communicate with Allah. And while I'm communicating with Allah, I'm going to take a phone call from my friend? Have I lost my mind? I mean, what is the purpose of having a phone? You're not going to make any communication with Allah through that phone in the middle of tawaf, in the middle of sa'i. Honestly, if it was me, I would throw the phone away and not even take it on hajj. Just, I mean, your relatives are going to say, how am I going to contact you? You're going to know if something goes wrong, and otherwise everything's fine. You don't need it. For the last thousands of years, nobody had these devices. Now you go there and you're trying to focus and people are texting you the problems of this world. People are texting you the foolishness that people are doing in this life. Yeah, I had this for breakfast and this for lunch. I wore these socks yesterday. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, honestly, it's actually a waste of time in real life. Forget about when we sit in front of the haram. Better to ignore and remove the cell phone. Don't take it to the masjid. Don't be distracted. Don't distract others. I mean, that's the worst thing, you know, to distract others. And then, honestly, better to not even take it on the trip. You'll be fine. Nothing's going to happen. You know, maybe if you need it for the group, you can just keep it off and put it on the side and turn it on when you get out of the masjid. But as much as possible, I highly, highly, highly advise that you avoid cell phones, particularly during acts of worship. Okay, so let's stop there and take... Well, what time is Asr? 6:30, okay.
5.
Yeah, so like 15, so I'm sure the Adhan is 15 minutes before, so we'll take the next break at, you know, 6:10 probably. Okay, so any questions up till there? So either you know, you have no questions or you have a million questions, yeah.
If you, by mistake, if you do, you miscount it and do more.
Okay, so the question is, what if you miscount and do more? If you are confused by the count and you come to the number and you finish 7, then you're done. Okay? Now, you finish 7 and you get out of tawaf And when you get up out of tawaf, they say, what are you guys, your friends, you see your friends, say, what are you doing? You did eight. I'm sure you did eight. It doesn't matter. Okay, you did seven. Because you came to the conclusion and you made your final best judgment and you completed the tawaf. Okay, so you're done. Yes. I'm having trouble hearing you. Sorry to cut you off. I didn't want to cut you off, but I'm having trouble hearing you. So the question is that if I'm in a state of ihram and I have the opportunity to touch the Kaaba or the Yemeni corner, should I avoid it because it's scented? So yes, that is an issue as well. The cloth of the Kaaba is highly scented and so is the Yemeni corner. Realistically, I don't think you should make the effort. You'll get very caught in a big crowd during Hajj. So I don't think this is the time to be chasing, touching the Yemeni corner. Okay? All right, now, a few questions. Got to read something close. Okay. So can I wear sunglasses while in ihram? Yes. No problem. You can wear sunglasses in ihram. Okay. Can we remove hijab in ihram to do wudu? What's the answer? Can a sister remove her hijab and make wudu? Yes. Because hijab is just a piece of cloth. It does not represent the ihram. The ihram is a state. The only way to get out of that state is to shave your head or cut your hair. Okay? All right. Are surgical masks allowed during Hajj to help those with low immune systems? Okay. It's not allowed to cover the face, correct? So you cannot wear a surgical mask, generally speaking, to cover the face. If there is a person who has an immune deficiency, right, and needs to wear a mask in order to avoid infection, then they can go ahead and wear the mask. And at the end of the Hajj, they can figure out whether they need to sacrifice an animal or pay sadaqah, and they can make up for it in that way. Okay? But there needs to be a necessity. Not just that, you know, I don't like the dust getting in my face, so I'm going to wear a mask. There needs to be a true necessity, which if a person has low immune system, that would be a true necessity. What's the name of the money belt at REI? I don't remember the exact name. But if you type in money belt or security belt on the REI website, you should be able to find it, inshallah. My father has done his own Hajj many years ago. This year, inshallah, he's paying for me to perform my Hajj with my brother. I am his daughter. Does this account reward for him as well? Yes. Every penny spent on Hajj is rewarded. It's actually in Hadith. Every bit of wealth that's spent on Hajj is rewarded. So the person who goes for Hajj gets a reward. The person who funds it also gets a reward. If we fund our own Hajj, we even get more reward. So not only will this, inshallah, daughter get her Hajj complete and a spiritual reward, but the father will also receive some reward. Can I apply coconut oil on my skin in a state of ihram? It has a natural fragrance scent. Okay, now, coconut is used for scent. That's the purpose of the coconut in that context. So it's going to be based on the purpose. So because the purpose of the coconut is for a fragrance, and you'll see in the high-end lotions and this, they put coconut as a fragrance, then that's okay. That's not okay. It's not okay. And so you should not be using that. If there's some little bit of coconut to create the oily nature and it doesn't have the smell, that's a different story. But usually coconut is a scent. Similarly, if toothpaste is scent-free, if toothpaste contains rose or lavender, so rose and lavender are put in toothpaste for scent, so then that would be for fragrance, so that would not be permissible. Okay, can an elastic band be used on the head? I assume a sister is sending this, so yes. An elastic band, you know, let's say they're sweating too much and they put it on the head. If a brother puts it on the head, I'm not sure. But for a sister, it would be okay. Okay, how about salah during the immigration process, visa processing times? Everybody's in the same boat. If there's 500 people who came for Hajj, I guarantee you when the Adhan is called, they're going to pray. So they actually have little areas where you can pray. They call the Adhan and then you go on the side and you pray. And usually your group organizer will organize the setup for the entire group to pray. So don't worry about it. The group organizer, inshallah, will help you with that. What if we're going to Medina first? If you're going to Medina first, you don't need to worry about Ihram. You'll fly to Medina or Jeddah, and then you'll end up in Medina, which is outside of the boundary. And as far as the immigration line in Medina, it's shorter. So in Medina, sometimes it could be half an hour to an hour to 2 hours. So Medina is definitely shorter for the immigration line. Okay, if my hotel room has cockroaches in Ihram, can I kill it? Okay, the answer is no. You cannot kill it. So you have to be careful because you're not allowed to even cut a blade of grass or kill anything living in the haram. Is it okay if we ask the hotel, you know, like guide the hotel, can you kill it? So yes, you can guide the hotel. They can do what they want. They have their own policies, okay? But you shouldn't kill it. Okay. So if slippers are worn by a man in ihram, is there a stipulation that they too should not have any stitching on them? No. The slippers don't necessarily not have to have stitching, so if those straps have stitching on them, that's fine. Yes, that's fine. What about the belt worn by men? Again, the belt is an exception. Normally you wouldn't wear a belt, nor would it be permissible, but the belt is permissible because of the need to keep your money and keep some of your few documents, so it's okay that the belt is stitched. Wouldn't it be better to perform Hajj Qiran, since it seems like it's not too hard to maintain ihram for women as compared to men? So again, Rasulullah ﷺ performed Qiran, but he advised the Sahaba to perform Tamattu. Okay? So because we've been advised to perform Tamattu, that's why scholars are of the opinion that it's better to perform Tamattu. If you're performing Qiran, scholars are of the opinion that Qiran is supererogatory because Rasulullah ﷺ performed it. But let me just add one thing. I was very simplistic in that explanation of Hajj Qiran and Hajj Tamattu. Hajj Qiran is much more than just maintaining the ihram. Actually, there's a few more parts of it which make it very difficult. I can tell you, Qiran is very difficult, especially in the hot weather, and especially with the few things that you have to add. There's an extra tawaf and this and that. It's very hard. It's very hard. So if you want to do it and you've got the himma, that's great. But I don't think that it's something to be taken lightly. Does hand sanitizer need to be alcohol-free or only fragrance-free? So ideally, you don't want the hand sanitizer to have alcohol in it, right? But that alcohol, if it's in there, it won't break your ihram. It would never break your ihram. It won't create a penalty in the ihram. So the only reason I mention hand sanitizer is because those people at the immigration desk won't process you unless they can get your fingerprint. So as soon as they can't get your fingerprint, they're going to take your hand and spray it without asking you. So in that case, you should just not be concerned about the fragrance problem. The alcohol problem is separate. You can wash that off later. Now, the other thing is that if you want to take sanitizer with you, you can, but I wouldn't worry about it. You're going to make life too hard. Okay, can we wear socks and shoes while making tawaf? No. Usually when you go into the tawaf is in the masjid, and so you'll remove your shoes when you're making tawaf. As far as socks are concerned, if you want to wear socks, that's up to you. You can wear socks if you want. Okay, is mosquito or insect repellent allowed, even though they are unscented, but they have oil or citronella? Is that okay? Yes, mosquito repellent and insect repellent are okay. But I'm just thinking that you probably won't need it. I don't remember seeing like mosquitoes there. I think they do a very good job of spraying down everything way before people come. And, remember that mosquitoes usually require water, like pools of water. It's so hot that there's not pools of water. So I don't think you have to worry about that. I don't remember that being a problem, honestly. Okay, sunglasses are okay. Is a husband allowed to protect a wife by standing behind her? Yes, that's okay. If it's so crowded and he wants to protect the wife, but I can just tell you that if a husband's sitting there and battling the whole crowd, the whole tawaf, to protect his wife, he probably has zero focus. The whole time he's just focusing on hitting this and hitting that, you know. So, I mean, you got to be realistic, you know. Tawaf is tawaf. It's very bumpy. It's very crowded. Honestly, the way that you want to probably do the tawaf, I mean, if the group organizers organize the group, they just want to stick the sisters together and stick some of the brothers around them, you know, so that everybody's kind of moving together in a relatively small group. Maybe this actually makes another issue that we should discuss in tawaf. If your goal in tawaf is going to be to stay with your group, then the only thing you're going to get out of tawaf is staying with your group. It's very hard to focus on tawaf already, but if the whole time you're looking and wondering, where is my neighbor, where is my aunt, where is my uncle, you're going to be very distracted during tawaf. I think a better strategy is to say to everybody, look, we'll try to stay together, but we're going to focus on our dhikr. At the end of tawaf, let's all meet at this place. You know, so for example, you know, where are you going to meet? So you're making tawaf, that's the black stone. You're not going to tell people to meet you behind the black stone, because how are you going to get there? You're going to tell people, let's meet at the first corner, make a line after the first corner, after the black stone, drive to the back of the masjid, and we'll meet back there somewhere, because that's actually where Safa and Marwa are. So you can make a plan, and then everybody can gather together, and everyone can reconvene, and that allows, I think, for better focus. And you're not going to be able to do that with 40 people. So maybe 10 people make a plan. Okay, we're going to do this, and then we'll move forward. Okay? And usually what happens, if you have a group leader that's organizing this process, what the group leader will do is the group leader will say, I'm going to stand over here, and I'm going to hold up the pink flag. Okay? So the group leader brings a pink flag, and I'm going to be waving the pink flag. So when you're done with tawaf, look in the sky for the pink flag. When you find it, come there. So some group leaders do this, group leaders do that, and that's a really good plan. Now, does everybody do it? Most people don't. But if the group leaders did that, it's very helpful, because then all I have to do is look for the pink flag, and nobody has a pink flag, you know. You just stick it on like an antenna, you know, like you bring those antennas, they expand, and then you tape a pink flag right there, and you just wave it. And everybody can see it, and they'll come and pray Salah Maqam Ibrahim there, and then you can send everybody off to say. So if there's a group leader in the audience or listening to this or somebody responsible, it's good to have some mechanism of alerting people to where they are, because it is confusing for the people going for the first time or even the third time as to how to find the group. Okay, so that is the final question from the sister side. How about the brother side? Are we done?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Typically, how long does it take to do the full zone?
Tawaf?
Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, how long does it take? In a non-crowded circumstance where you're just making tawaf, it's probably 40 minutes, comfortably slow. At the time of Hajj, it probably goes up to 2.5 to 3 hours. It could take up to 4 hours, depending on how the crowd is. I'd say 2.5. You know, if you're on the first floor and you're moving with the crowd, 2.5 hours. If you're on the second floor, the diameter has increased. So now you've increased the circumference, 2 pi r, right? It's the formula. So now you've increased the amount that you're walking and the amount of time that it's going to take. So if you're on the second floor, you're looking at, you know, 1.5 hours. 2 hours. Yes?
What's the boundary of the masjid, the actual structure of the marble mat outside?
What's the boundary of the masjid? The boundary of the masjid is the actual structure. However, the boundary of the jama'ah is the extent of the jama'ah. So if the jama'ah overflows the masjid, then you join the jama'ah by praying in the street if you have to. Okay, the 2 rak'ah at Maqam Ibrahim is wajib. So let me say it this way. The 2 rak'ah after tawaf is wajib. It's sunnah to do it by Maqam Ibrahim, but you're not going to be able to. So let's just remove Maqam Ibrahim from the picture. The two rak'ah after tawaf is wajib. Yes?
Can you take a break between tawaf and sa'i?
Yes. If you want to go back to your hotel, you can. And most people don't, because it's hard to get in and out of the masjid. So most people will sort of go on the side, pray their two rak'ahs, make dua, relax, look at the Kaaba, drink zamzam, take a few more minutes to relax, and when they're all set, then they'll go and do sa'i. Yes?
If we finish the dua in three times, can you start sa'i and then do the two rak'ahs, or do you have to wait?
If it's salah during makruh time, you can pray the salah later if you want. Makruh or haram?
Makruh.
So yes, you can pray this. You can go ahead and do tawaf, and you can go ahead and do sa'i, and you can pray the two rak'ah after that if you want. Yes.
So when you first start the tawaf, are you saying this one walk twice?
Yes.
What if someone misses the imaginary line? This moves on with the second.
Yeah. So if somebody misses the imaginary line, if you forget to expose your right shoulder, if you forget to do the jogging-like movement, if you forget to make takbir, if you forget to make istilam, all of that is extra. None of that is penalized. Your tawaf will still count. So long as you make 7 circuits with an intention, your tawaf counts. Even if you don't start with a takbir. Okay? So it's just a question of making 7 circuits. So if you totally can't remember any of this, okay, you're totally confused and you're stressed out, then the only thing you have to know is to make the intention and start walking 7 times. Okay? Alright. So I think... let's just talk a little bit about sa'i. So remember that Umrah is composed of 2 parts. Tawaf plus salah and sa'i. Tawaf plus salah and sa'i. Sa'i refers to walking between Safa and Marwa 7 times. Literally, the Arabic word sa'i means to run. Legally, it refers to going between Safa and Marwa 7 times. It is not an independent act of worship. Okay, what do I mean by that? Listen. Let's say that one day you're sitting in the masjid, you've done your hajj, you're relaxing. You can go and perform tawaf. You can do an independent tawaf just because you want to do tawaf. But there is no such thing as sa'i for ibadah. Independent sa'i for ibadah. So you can't just say, oh, I feel like doing sa'i today. Let me go do sa'i. No, there is no such thing. So it is not an independent act of worship. Okay. Before you do sa'i, it's mustahab to go back and do one more istilam. So what do you do? Okay. So remember that I started my tawaf with reading the black stone, correct? And then I did 7 more. And then I went to perform 2 rak'ah salah. And then I partook of zamzam. Now I'm way back in the masjid. I'm by Safa and Marwa. So then, if you stand by Safa and Marwa and look over, you can see the Kaaba. So you have to do one more istilam all the way from Safa. So from there, you'll do one more istilam. Bismillahi Allahu Akbar. And kiss the hand. So that's the 9th istilam. Does that make sense? So, you're going to do 1 istilam before you begin sa'i. Now, then you'll go to Safa. And from Safa, you will then start the sa'i. As you head towards Safa, there's signs everywhere. Sa'i begins here, Safa is here. As you head towards the sa'i, one thing that you can recite is the following ayah. أَبْدَأُ بِمَا بَدَأَ اللَّهُ بِهِ. I begin with that which Allah began with. Okay, that's not an ayah. That's just a statement. إِنَّ الصَّفَى وَالْمَرْوَةَ مِنْ شَعَائِرِ اللَّهِ. That's part of an ayah. Okay? So what you're saying is that I am beginning with what Allah began with. And then you're reciting a part of the Qur'an. إِنَّ الصَّفَى وَالْمَرْوَةَ مِنْ شَعَائِرِ اللَّهِ. So, tell me, what is the first one listed? Safa or Marwa? So because Safa is listed first, you're saying, I began with that which Allah began with. Allah began with Safa, listing it first, so I am going to Safa first. Does that make sense? أَبْدَأُ بِمَا بَدَأَ اللَّهُ بِهِ إِنَّ الصَّفَى وَالْمَرْوَةَ مِنْ شَعَائِرِ اللَّهِ. Okay, now what's the wisdom there? I'll share one spiritual dimension, which actually I often forget to share. I don't even know if I've said this before. But there's a very subtle spiritual dimension here which can make this a very deep act of ibadah for you. And that is that in life, it's often difficult to figure out where to even begin. You know, when you're really confused about something, you don't even know where to begin. Right? So like, for example, I mess up my whole life and I'm trying to figure out how to get my life back on track. So I'm thinking in my head, I don't even know where to begin. So one dua that can be made at this time is, oh Allah, I am beginning with Safa because you began with it. As a barakah of this beginning, grant me the wisdom to know where to begin in all of my aspects of life. You understand what I'm saying? So that in that context, Allah will then grant you the wisdom and the hikmah to know where to begin in your business transactions, when you're looking for a house, when you're selecting a spouse, when you're having to decide what to do about your children, when you're choosing a school, when you're choosing where to live. Inshallah, Allah will put barakah in your beginnings. And anything that starts in a good beginning often ends well. Right? What begins well, ends well, inshallah. So this is a barakah of that time. And one of the du'as that we can make at that time is, Ya Allah, abda'u bima bada Allahu bi. Today I didn't know where to begin. I'm seeking my own rectification. I'm trying to change my life. I wouldn't have known where to begin. Ya Allah, you guided me to begin at Safa, so I'm starting at Safa. Ya Allah, guide me to the beginning of everything. Guide me to the beginning of how I can begin to rectify myself. How can I find the circumstances that will allow me to benefit myself? How can I begin to change my life? How can I begin to approach you? How can I begin to live like a real Muslim? أَبْدَأُ بِمَا بَدَأَ اللَّهُ بِهِ إِنَّ الصَّفَى وَالْمَرْوَةَ مِنْ شَعَائِرِ اللَّهِ. That's the attitude that should be at that point. And if we make that the attitude, it makes the beginning very special. And if the beginning's special, inshallah, the end will also be special. Now, I'll tell you the worrisome thing, people finish tawaf and they bring it a step down. People are like, oh, tawaf is all done, the Kaaba is all done, let's relax. We'll relax during sa'i, we'll talk and we'll have fun. No, it's the opposite. We should kick it up a notch. We should kick it up a notch. That's the beginning. I just finished my tawaf. Now let me actually begin my life. Let me begin my spiritual life. So many du'as. Ya Allah, just as you allowed Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu to convert near Safa, because remember he converted near Safa, and he began in near Safa. Allow me to finally become a true Muslim near Safa. Allow me to attain that same fervor of deen near Safa. Right? You know, Darul Arqam, the house where they used to gather, the Rasulullah ﷺ and the early Sahaba used to gather, was right next to Safa. Ya Allah, allow my house to be a place where people gather for deen. And allow me to join the gatherings of deen. You understand? So, sa'i is not the end. It's the new beginning. Get this clear, because I'm telling you, 99% of people who make sa'i, they down it one notch. Should be the other way. We should kick it up one notch. We should be focused on Allah. We should be thinking about what happened during sa'i and the barakah associated with sa'i. And sa'i is something that you learn how to do. I can tell you that, Allah blessed me, and I don't have the time to go through this story, but Allah blessed me to do sa'i one time with probably, in my mind, one of the most pious people on the planet. And I'll tell you that when I saw his sa'i, that was the day I learned sa'i. I read so many books about sa'i. I heard so many talks about sa'i. I saw him doing sa'i. He was crying like a little baby. He was crying like a little baby. He went to Safa, he broke down crying. He went to Marwa, he broke down crying. That was the day I said, Subhanallah, my whole life I was bringing sa'i down one notch. Actually, the awliya bring it up one notch. That was the first time I witnessed what is Sa'i. But I'm just sharing with each of you that Sa'i is the new beginning. It's the beginning of our new life. Abda'u bima bada'a Allahu bih. Inna as-safa wal marwata min sha'airillah. And then we should begin to think about all the blessings in the context of Safa and Marwa. So we get there, we make the intention. Now, this is what it looks like. It's kind of a little hill. There's a lot of people. You know, there's like, you're not able to see it in this picture, but there's a little bit of stone here. And then essentially, we stand there and we begin the intention. So we climb the hill slightly and we make intention. Hey, so somebody tell me, what's the intention? Oh Allah, I intend to perform 7 circuits of Sa'i. One there and one back. Each one is one. So one to Marwa, number 2 back to Safa. So then what do we say? Make it easy for me and accept it from me. So I mean, if you didn't figure that out, then that's the standard intention. Oh Allah, I intend to perform Sa'i. Make it easy for me and accept it from me. Okay? Now, the next thing, we make dua. We raise our hands and we face the Kaaba. And then we say the following. Allahu Akbar. To ourselves. Allahu Akbar. La ilaha illallah. Allahu Akbar. La ilaha illallah. Allahu Akbar. La ilaha illallah. Then we make salawat on Rasulullah. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammad wa barik wa sallam. Or any salawat, whichever, even the one you recite, Durud Ibrahimi in Salah. And then we make dua for a few minutes. Sunnah to hold up the hand and make dua for a few minutes. And we'll talk about the details of those dua after Asr Salah, inshallah.